It's Central Time. I'm Mike Arnold in for Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Thanks for joining us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up, our guest says it's time to quit writing those cookie-cutter annual holiday letters. Nobody believes them anyway, she says.
But first, yesterday, the Milwaukee County District Attorney announced that former Milwaukee police officer Christopher Manny will not be charged in the shooting death of Dontre Hamilton. It's the latest in a number of cases nationwide where police officers have not been indicted for police-involved deaths.
Protesters are still demonstrating in New York City after an NYPD officer wasn't charged in a choking death there. And there's still unrest in Ferguson, Missouri, as Officer Darren Wilson walked away without getting an indictment there.
These cases indicate that it's difficult to indict a police officer for on-duty deaths. For an explanation as to why that is, we've called on Kimmy King. She's a professor of political science at the University of North Texas. Kimmy, welcome back to Central Time.
It's good to be here.
Now, we've heard about these high-profile situations where people haven't been indicted. Is it true? Is it difficult to indict police officers who shoot people on duty?
It is extremely difficult to indict officers for a number of different reasons. The larger issue is that it's quite striking because most typically grand juries do indict. So to the average person accused of a crime, in the most recent study we have from 2010, out of 162,000 federal cases, only 11 wound up with no true bills, meaning that they kicked them out. Everything else of those 162,000 went forward. Yet when you look around the country, you see repeatedly in looking at police homicide cases that those numbers just simply are not comparable.
So basically, if a normal person, or not a normal person, but a person who's not a police officer, the average person, shoots somebody, they're going to wind up in a trial. But for police, it's different.
Yeah, and I will draw on, for example, in Texas, in my state here, Texas grand juries in Houston haven't indicted a Houston police officer since 2004, although there have been allegations of upwards of 288 police use of force that resulted in a homicide. In Dallas grand juries, in reviewing 81 shootings in the last 4 years, only one officer was indicted. So it happens quite frequently. Now, one thing that I would point out is there is a case that most people are not looking at that happened down in North Carolina with an officer, Randall Carrick. And he had initially not been indicted, but then the prosecutor was required to recuse himself for having a conflict of interest. When it was turned over to the state's attorney general office, the officer was indicted. So this idea that it's always the case is simply not true. It just depends on the method that the prosecutor goes through.
Now, could you help us understand what a district attorney or a grand jury would be looking for when they're trying to determine whether or not to indict somebody?
Sure. And remember, in a grand jury case, all you're looking for is probable cause that a criminal act occurred, and then that refers it on to what we know as the petite jury, which is the trial jury. It's what we usually think of when we think about American jury trials. And so prosecutors have to make a determination about whether or not they're going to proceed with the criminal charges, and so they will do an investigation. And what you see in that regard is that there are really three different things that are operating in a grand jury involving a police officer. One is juror bias, two is prosecutorial bias, and three is prosecutorial discretion. And it's that latter category that gets so many folks up in arms. And, you know, prosecutors feel compelled to bring a case, even if that case might be weak. And as a consequence, then, there can be problems.
So why do they not do that with police officers as often, do you think?
When you look at police officers, so for one, when it does get referred to, so the first instance, the prosecutor referring it, prosecutors need the police. They need law enforcement. Remember, in all of their other criminal cases that go on every other day of the year, police departments need to have a relationship with the low school district attorney, and the district attorney also needs to have a relationship with the prosecutor, with the local officers. And so it's that relationship that can oftentimes be the source of difficulty because there's a reluctance to kind of go after what's seen as one of their own. And then even if they do get to a grand jury, remember, grand jurors tend to trust police officers. We rely on them to keep us safe. And if you look at studies of when officers are not prosecuted, if they show remorse, if they say it's part of their training, if they say they acted in self-defense, they are much more likely not to be indicted.
And so, I mean, so in some ways, maybe the bias is justified that people believe police officers are doing a difficult job in protecting the citizens.
Correct.
But isn't there also a risk that if police officers aren't indicted and you see a lot of high profile issues like this, that the trust of the police could actually be affected in a negative way as well?
Correct. And it's on this issue of excessive use of force that gets the public so triggered by these different incidents and what has really and I would also point out, this is something we've been going through since the 1960s. This is not new. If you go back in time, there have always been these high profile cases of excessive use of police force. In fact, the very idea of having police review boards, and I noted that Governor Walker is looking at trying to change the law now in the state of Wisconsin over this. There have always been these issues of how we review what police officers do. And is it better to let a grand jury and a prosecutor make those determinations, or should we let it be up to the lawmaking process that goes through reform? But the reality is we've been going through this since the 1960s, and I think that's part of the level of frustration you see in the reaction that you get from the public about these issues.
Do you think that public reaction could have an impact on things? I mean, I suppose this is something that would probably have to go higher than local district attorneys, right?
Well, one thing that you're seeing increasingly as a response to this is that you remove the local prosecutor from the equation. So it either gets turned over to a state attorney general or it goes to federal prosecutors, that there's been a violation of federal civil rights. And so for those people who are unhappy about police behavior, you know, my suggestion would be that is the route that you go for some reform, is that you remove that local connection on the investigation, which is what contributes to this concern that there is this juror bias and this prosecutor bias.
Here in Milwaukee, it was a district attorney who was reviewing the case and ultimately making the decision. In other places like Ferguson, they have a grand jury. Were grand juries used in some places to try to overcome a situation where there might be a perception that the district attorney is making?
Oh, absolutely. And you see that, like, for example, in the North Carolina case. I mean, you see that there. Here's another thing that's part of the system, and that is, even if you get it away from prosecutorial discretion, like what y'all have there in Wisconsin, another thing that prosecutors can do is that they can order a special grand jury. When you order a special grand jury, that subjects it to a much longer process. It means there's more investigation. Special grand juries are impaneled for longer periods of time. They have the ability to call witnesses. And so what can happen there is that in the course of that investigation, you have the ability to either make the case or to break the case. And so that's another thing that can happen. And for example, in that North Carolina case, it was an additional grand jury being brought forward that did a special investigation that ultimately led to the prosecution of that police officer.
Now, aren't there some people who would criticize that approach and say that it could really slow down things and make it difficult for police officers to do their jobs?
Oh, absolutely. And part of this tension that you see is that who wants to second guess a police officer when he's pulling up to or she is pulling up to the scene of what may be a potential crime? And so in the case of North Carolina, that police officer was responding to a burglary call, and what he came across was a Florida A&M University football player whose car had crashed and he was walking to get help. And so, you know, these are difficult determinations to be made that are on the spot, you know, judgments that have to be called. And that's where you see this tension. I think that in cases like, you know, Ferguson and the Garner case and your case in Wisconsin, it gets very difficult because the broader public comes in and they look at circumstances and the facts of a case and think to themselves, I wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have thought a police officer would have done that.
Well, the difficult issue, definitely. Thanks so much for talking to us about this.
You betcha. Support public radio, folks. Take care and happy holidays.
And happy holidays to you, too. That was Cammie King, a professor of political science at the University of North Texas.